Well, this is our maiden voyage, I guess, for a podcast on the new Harrisburg Symphony blog. Dick Strasser here, and I'm talking with Stuart Molina, conductor of the Harrisburg Symphony, who's going to be telling us about Tosca coming up with the next concert. And my first thought was, this is not a typical concert with a concerto and a symphony and all of that. It's an opera. And I wanted to start by asking you, why were you deciding to do an opera on the symphony concert season, and why Tosca?
Wow, that's a big question. I think that the answer to the first question is that, first of all, I love opera. That's the basic underlying reason, is I wanted to do it. But I also feel that these days, particularly in regional opera companies, you don't get a full orchestra playing these wonderful scores. And I think that a lot of the beauty of the experience of opera is in the orchestration and in having a full symphony orchestra playing. And so I was thinking, well, that would be a lovely way to feature the orchestra, to give the audience something that they might not ordinarily get in this region. There are many opera companies in central Pennsylvania, but I don't know of any that performs with a full orchestra. Most of them use a very much pared down reduction. Why Tosca? There too, several reasons. First of all, my affinity and love of Puccini. I think this is an amazing music that we should be performing. But also, practically, it's a good choice because there's not a huge amount of stage action which you need to see in order to appreciate the opera. And also because the cast size is handleable. If we were doing,
Aida.
An opera, Aida, or any number of operas, Falstaff, that have 15 singers, we couldn't afford to do it. Tosca basically revolves around three main characters, and then there are two featured smaller roles, and so I thought this would be a good choice, that the size of, let's say, an oratorio in terms of forces with a chorus and four or five soloists. So that's the reason why. I'm very pleased about it. I think it will work in a beautiful way.
And who are we going to hear singing all of this? Where are they coming from? And
well, there too, the timing was perfect for my choice of Tosca. A couple of years ago, I did an opera gala in Delaware with Opera Delaware. And two of the singers that we'll be hearing in Tosca were singing at that performance, and that's Dinyar Vanya, the tenor, and Grant Youngblood, the baritone. And when I did that performance, I immediately thought I want to do Tosca with these singers. Dinyar has actually performed with me a few times before. He was here doing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, the small tenor role, but the tenor role nonetheless. And I did a series of holiday concerts with him a year ago. He has a beautiful voice, perfectly suited for Puccini, big lyrical tenor. And Grant Youngblood, he and I go back several years. He was a last-minute replacement when I did Carmina Burana in Greensboro before I came to Harrisburg. And subsequently, our paths crossed again at this gala. He has a beautiful, big baritone voice. He's a very good-looking guy, a very good actor. I think, again, perfectly suited. Both of them have done these roles before. And then the Tosca that we have is a singer named Othalie Graham. And Othalie and I crossed paths, although we didn't work together. When I conducted Porgy and Bess several years ago, she came and visited the company. And she had just done Turandot there, and I had heard raves about what she had done with that role. And she's subsequently performed Turandot throughout North America and also Tosca. And so she came to mind, and the best way that I can describe her voice is kind of a cross between one of the great lyric sopranos, someone like Mirella Franey or Renata Tebaldi, and Birgit Nielsen. She's got an enormous voice. And I think that in the forum, it's important to have these big voices, particularly for a piece like this where the orchestra is playing all the time and not always so softly. So I think that triumvirate is going to be fantastic. The role of Angelotti, which is featured in the first act, is being played by Damian Savarino, who I've worked with many times as well. He's a bass baritone on faculty at Messiah College.
And in Harrisburg.
And in Harrisburg, right here. And He immediately leapt to mind, and in fact, the day that we programmed it, someone must have leaked it to him, because he sent me an email saying, you know, I'd really like to do Angelotti, and I wrote back saying, it's already done. We'll be calling you very soon. And the role of the sacristan, the other large featured role, is being performed by Rick Zook, who's an old friend of mine, and he'll be coming back next year to perform the bass roles in The Creation. He, too, has an enormous, beautiful instrument. And so I really couldn't be more delighted with the cast. I think it's a first-rate opera cast, and I'm anxious to put it all together.
And choruses in the Te Deum scene at the end of Act One.
Big choruses. It's not an enormous chorus role in terms of the amount of singing they do, but in terms of the importance of it, it's crucial to the success of the first act. And there, too, we'll have Linda Tedford's Susquehanna Chorale and one of her choruses at Messiah joining forces. Two other roles have been cast locally. One is the role of the shepherd boy in the last act, and that will be sung by a young man from Hershey named Brendan McAllister, who came and sang for me several months ago. And lastly, the role of Spoletta, the policeman, will be played by Christian Say, another local singer of a very, very fine voice. And so I'm very excited that we've involved people from the area as well as people from other areas. I think it's going to be fabulous.
That's cool. It sounds great. And I've seen many opera performances that don't have big names that are going to draw the audience. I mean, I remember 25 years ago somebody saying they would come to a symphony concert when, you know, we had Luciano Pavarotti, which, of course, who could afford?
Of course.
But you can hear performances sometimes by people, maybe not as good as Pavarotti, but at least, you know, as good as many operas that you'd hear on the Metropolitan broadcast.
Well, when you think about the opera world, the same thing applies as what applies to our soloists and our normal soloists from the Masterwork series. Generally, the people that anyone has heard of aren't affordable, certainly not for an orchestra of our size, and increasingly for orchestras of any size. And in the opera world, I think even more so, because there really aren't that many opera houses that have that high a profile. So you have the singers who are big names at the Metropolitan Opera, and there are increasingly more of those with the advent of the new cinema showings of these operas. But then there's a whole world outside of that. And these are singers that have sung in major opera houses around the world. Grant has performed many roles at the New York City Opera, and Athalie's performed all over North America, Dignard as well. So I think that the audience is going to be, I wouldn't even say surprised, but certainly delighted.
In terms of an opera, which is visual, I mean, it's telling a story through the singing, is it going to be sung in Italian or English?
It will be sung in Italian. We will have super titles translating the Italian, so anyone who is in the audience will be able to follow the plot.
Excellent. And but not seeing the action on the stage, is what sort of things should they keep in mind in terms of making this transition?
Well, there are a couple of challenges in terms of that with Tosca particularly. Where there are staging things. For example, at the end of the opera, she throws herself off of the side of a building.
Yeah.
And we will not be doing that. She will be in the front of the stage, she'll sing her final line, and that will be it.
Yeah.
The opera will end. In addition, she stabs Scarpia in the end of the second act, and I'm not sure how we're going to pull that off, but it certainly will not be as gruesome or vivid as you would get in a staged performance. And lastly, in the second act, there's an offstage scene that's happening. Cavaradossi, the tenor, is being tortured offstage while Scarpia is interrogating Tosca onstage. Everything will be onstage. The chorus that would have been offstage will be onstage. The interrogation and the cries of pain will be onstage. But what I'll probably do is put them towards the back of the stage and have the main action in the front of the stage. What to expect? Expect singers in dress clothes. There aren't going to be costumes. There aren't going to be props. But singing the entire opera. I mean, anyone who watches it will be able to follow everything that is happening. And so I don't think there should be any apprehension about coming to an opera performance that isn't acted. If anything, there will be a clarity that you might not get otherwise, because all the focus will be on the singing, the words, and the music.
it's not really very different from listening to a recording where you can't see anything at all.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the only difference is that it's live. And, and so you get that added adrenaline, the added excitement, the synergy between the audience and the performers. And so I think that it will be a very comfortable experience for everybody.
This is really a great opera, too, because, I mean, it's so typical of the operatic passions, this larger-than-life emotions and everything. And everything, you mentioned Scarpia's murder, and Cavaradossi gets shot by a firing squad, and Tosca jumps off the roof.
This is the paradigm. This is the quintessential Verismo opera. And the idea of Verismo opera, which is late 19th century, early 20th century, is to provide these deep human emotions in sometimes contrived plots, but always highly driven, highly powerful. So here you have the jealous lover who, because of her jealousy, leads the bad guy to find the hero, and then he's condemned to death, and they stage a fake execution, and she thinks he's still alive, and he turns out to be dead, so she jumps off the turret of the castle. I mean, yeah, this is heavy duty stuff.
Doesn't happen every day.
This is opera cum opera. And the second act, I don't think there's anything better in the entire repertoire in terms of the pure passion and drama of the situations. It's magnificent music.
Do we need to get into the plot now? I mean, I can add the written plot.
I can give a bare bones.
Okay.
At the beginning of the opera, we have Angelotti, who has escaped from prison. And Angelotti is one of the leaders of the fallen republic. And
first of all, we're set in Rome.
We are set in Rome.
1800, Napoleon is taking over Europe. So that's part of the premise.
Exactly.
This is the opposition.
And we are at a church near the Castello Sant'Angelo, the Sant'Angelo Castle, which is now a prison. And Angelotti has been in prison. He was captured by the bad guy, Scarpia, and he has escaped. And so he comes to the church and he finds the chapel of the Attavanti. The Attavanti is his sister. They are noble people and they've endowed this chapel. And he has come there to hide. The sacristan, who's in charge of taking care of the church, comes in, and he finds Cavaradossi, who's our hero, the tenor, painting a picture of the Madonna, a portrait of the Madonna. And he's used as his unknowing model, the sister of Angelotti, the Attavanti. She's blonde with blue eyes, and he's painting this beautiful picture. And he sings about the beauty of this woman who he saw praying in the chapel, as compared to his beloved Tosca, who's a great opera singer of the time, who has dark hair and dark eyes. Angelotti comes out, sees Cavaradossi. Cavaradossi is a sympathizer and says that he will do anything to help him. Angelotti hides when Tosca is heard coming in. She and Cavaradossi have an exchange. She sees the portrait. She has a fit of jealousy. She thinks that that Cavaradossi is having an affair with this beautiful blonde woman, and he assures her, "No, I just saw her praying, and I love you, and I'll change her eyes to black to make you happy." And so then she leaves contented. Angelotti comes back in, and Cavaradossi gives him some food to eat, and then sends him to his garden, where there's a hidden cave inside the well. So Angelotti runs off. Tosca comes back on and notices that Cavaradossi is gone. Meanwhile, Scarpia has entered, and he has a passion for Tosca. I wouldn't say he's in love with her. He's very much a man of the moment, but he has lust for her. And he plays on her jealousies. He knows that Angelotti has escaped. He suspects that Cavaradossi has something to do with it. And he makes her think that Cavaradossi has run off to his house for a rendezvous with the Attavanti. So Tosca runs off to find out Cavaradossi and expose his betrayal. And then Scarpia sings his first act aria, Va Tosca, in which he talks about his lust for her and how he will triumph. And at the same time, the chorus comes on and sings the great Te Deum at the end of the first act.
Which is a great contrast of Scarpia, the chief of police or
well,
something
he's,
like
that? Well, he's the head guy. He's the ruler. He's not really a policeman, but he's kind of like the Inquisitioner.
Right. And he's lusting after this famous opera singer, and then in comes the kids and the choir, and
everybody
get the Te Deum to celebrate this victory. And while everybody's praising God,
he's talking about bad stuff. So now we're in the second act, and Scarpia's men have followed Tosca to Cavaradossi's place. By this time, Angelotti has already hidden. Tosca has realized her mistake, and Cavaradossi has told her what's going on and told her that she must be silent. And Scarpia is disgusted that they haven't been able to find Angelotti, but is happy that they have Cavaradossi. And they have all kinds of evidence against him. They have a basket of food that we know Cavaradossi didn't eat, that's been eaten. And we have an extra key to the chapel that's been found. And so Scarpia takes in Cavaradossi for an interrogation. Cavaradossi says he doesn't know anything, and they take him off to be tortured into the next room. Then Tosca comes in. She's been summoned. And Scarpia tries to get her to admit what she knows. She says she knows nothing, and she begins hearing cries of agony from offstage as they're torturing Cavaradossi. And she's obviously very, very upset. And eventually, Cavaradossi, after telling her not to speak, he's in such great pain that she tells Scarpia that he's in the well, in the gardens, and they send men off to capture him. Cavaradossi's torture ends. They bring him on. She says she didn't say anything, but then Scarpia lets him know that she did. He screams about his betrayal, and then at that moment, we hear news from Scarpia's henchman, Scirone, that Bonaparte has won, and that they're all going down. And Scarpia is upset. Cavaradossi sings a patriotic hymn to the Republic, and Scarpia condemns him to death and sends him off to be killed. Tosca is now left with Scarpia, and to make a long story short, he says the only way that you can save your lover is to give yourself to me. She sings Visi d'Arte, about how she's lived for art and how can this be her fate. And Scarpia sings an equally incredible aria about his passions, and she then tells him that she will agree to give herself to him if he will release Cavaradossi. And so Scarpia tells the head of the police, Spoleta, that he should stage a fake execution, but with this wink-wink kind of approach, so the policeman knows what his real intentions are. Tosca, thinking that it's all set, asks for a safe conduct letter, which Scarpia writes, and then he says, finally, you're mine, and she stabs him. And he dies, leaving Tosca alone for a very quiet end to Act Two, and she runs off to find her lover. In Act Three, we hear a shepherd boy singing in the fields. This is just set up as a foil to the action, this pastoral moment, and then we're brought into the jail where Cavaradossi is awaiting his execution. Mm-hmm. A jailer comes. He asks if he can write a letter to Tosca. The jailer gives him pen and paper, and he sings a wonderful aria about the sweet life that he's about to say goodbye to. At the end of this, Tosca enters with her exciting news that they have safe passage. She tells him the whole story about how she's killed Scarpia, and they sing of their joy and their excitement of the new life that they'll have outside of Rome. Then we hear a drum, and it's time for Cavaradossi's quote-unquote fake execution. She coaches him on how to behave once he's shot. We hear the shots ring out. He falls. After the soldiers have left, she says, okay, it's time to get up, ready to go, and realizes that she's been betrayed and he's dead. At this point, the men have found Scarpia, and they're coming after her, and she says, Scarpia, before God, we'll meet again, and she jumps off the turret, and the opera ends in a great dramatic fashion. Not quite a nutshell, but...
no, but that actually... Well, hopefully it will be helpful. I don't need to write out the story. It's all there. It's an incredible story, and it's very gripping, and the way it builds to the end of each act and all of that sort of thing, and all the contrast, like having the shepherd boy before the execution and all of those things that you expect.
And the melodies are just incredible.
Visi d'arte and the tenor aria in Act 3 and all of that.
Everything is marvelous.
The thing that always intrigued me is the opera is all about Tosca, this famous opera singer, but the opening of the opera is Scarpia's chords.
That's right. While Scarpia's persona dominates the piece, the dramatic core of the piece is the second act. The love of Cavaradossi and Tosca is obviously important, but the underlying message of this piece is they're just small players in this much larger plot that's happening. The Republic is coming back, but at great sacrifice, and these are just the pawns in the story. Even Scarpia, who is the marionette, let's say, up until the point that he loses power, but even he is just a player in this larger drama that's happening. But the chords that we get at the beginning, and I'll actually play them for you, because you hear them again and again, this Scarpia's theme is quite powerful and does serve somewhat as an underlying through musical line. What's interesting is that Puccini was not a Wagnerite, and yet he clearly uses leitmotifs. I mean, this is the Scarpia leitmotif. And you'll hear this again and again, and then you hear Angelotti's leitmotif. And that comes it back again and again whenever we have music about Angelotti, and so on and so forth. We have which is a little snippet from Cavaradossi's aria, Recondita Romania, and that becomes his theme, and you have Tosca's theme. So forth. And he does use these repeatedly, so you can follow the story just from hearing the melodies. You know about what they're speaking, and you know what's the central dramatic line at any given point. The last thing that I'll say about these incredible melodies is their utter simplicity. You hear any one of these melodies, they're basically scales. Sometimes you'll have an arpeggio, but Puccini's able to milk these melodies of incredible emotion because of the way he harmonizes them. He uses suspensions, which I'm not going to get into, but the idea of notes that kind of linger on that need to be resolved and create this emotional tension underneath the melodies. But Puccini was, like Mozart, like Tchaikovsky, like Schubert, just a natural melodist. He had a gift for writing beautiful melodies that very much was the envy of all composers. Mm-hmm. There are great composers anywhere you look, but those that really are able to create gorgeous melodies are very few and far between. And I think Puccini, the reason why Puccini's music is so loved and so often played is not just the drama of the operas. I mean, there are a lot of dramatic operas, but more the fact that you just have melody after melody after melody of memorable music that you'll be humming for weeks after.
And not just great tunes, because they always work with the drama to create the complete work, which is what the whole thing is about. Because, I mean, I've heard many operas that have great tunes.
That's right.
But people don't go to see Charpentier's Louise because they want to hear the aria Depuis le Jour. I mean, that's it.
That's right.
Oh, and Tosca's full of it.
And just to contrast it with what you had before, I mean, you have the bel canto period at the beginning of the 19th century, which is just about melodies. Mm-hmm. And then you have Verdi, who bridges the gap between bel canto and dramatic opera. So by the time he's reached Falstaff and Otello, he's writing a very compelling dramatic opera. And then that brings us into Verismo, which is the idea of this intense drama, this high human drama. That
more realistic, emotional.
Exactly.
Kind of
everything is about real human emotion. And Verismo opera is among the most popular. You know, I think that if you listed the top 20 operas out there, probably four of them, or five maybe, would be by Puccini, and many of the others would be by Verdi. And so it's music that I love, and I'm very happy to be bringing it to Harrisburg.
It's going to be a great concert. The performances are Saturday, April 25th at 8 o'clock, and then Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Forum. So come on down, as they say. Have a great time.
Thanks, Dick.
Thank you.